Never in a million years did I ever think something like this would happen to me. Even now, I wish this was all a really bad dream, but unfortunately, this is as real as it gets. I was just another 20-something, trying to declutter my apartment and make a few extra bucks on the side. Craigslist was the obvious choice. I mean, it's pretty safe to say that almost everyone has sold something on there. I had this lovely kitchen table set I'd outgrown, and I figured someone else might appreciate it. So I snapped a photo, gave a brief description, and hit post. I swear, it wasn't even 10 minutes before my inbox pinged with a new message. I wondered if it could be a potential buyer so quickly. I was pretty surprised. The person seemed interested, asking questions about the wood, the number of chairs, the size. Nothing out of the ordinary. After a few back and forths, the buyer asked when they could come over to see it. Eager to get the sale over with, I offered them my address and we fixed the time. It was all pretty standard stuff. But the day of the viewing, they were a no-show. I remember feeling a mix of annoyance and relief. I mean, no one likes to be stood up, but on the other hand, maybe I wasn't ready to part with the table after all. As I was mulling over these thoughts, I decided to take my little dog, Sparky, out for his evening walk. That's when I first noticed it. A car, one I hadn't seen before, parked a little ways down the street. I shrugged it off as just a visitor for one of the neighbors. The next day, the car was still there. Every time I stepped out, it seemed like the car's engine would rev to life, and it would just slowly drive by. I tried to convince myself it was all in my head. Maybe someone visiting a friend for a few days. But there was this gut feeling, something I couldn't shake off. On the third day, I decided to take a different route while walking Sparky. But that car, it was still there, and its engine still roared to life as I approached. It was starting to feel creepy, and Sparky, bless his soul, seemed to pick up on my anxiety, sticking closer than usual. Confiding in my best friend, Lisa, she suggested maybe it was someone from the street who'd gotten a new car. It made sense, but that nagging feeling wouldn't go away. Something just didn't feel right. My days became a routine of peeking out of my window, checking if that car was there. And like clockwork, it was. There were no particular patterns, no timings, just a constant presence of that vehicle and its slow drives whenever I was outside. By the end of the week, things escalated. One evening, returning from grocery shopping, I found a note on my front door. No name, no address, just a message which read, "I like your table." Panic set in. I rushed inside, double locked the door, and started drawing all the curtains. Connecting the dots wasn't hard. The ad, the buyer, the car, it was all linked. I called the police immediately. They listened, took down the details, and said they'd send a patrol car around my area. Sleep was elusive that night. Every noise from the street had me on edge. Sparky, sensing my distress, kept close, his eyes never leaving mine. The next morning, when I mustered enough courage to peek out, the car was gone. Relief flooded me, but it was short-lived. Around noon, as I was trying to work from home, there was a knock on my door. The peephole showed a police officer. My heart raced. I wondered if it had to do with the previous night. The officer, once I opened the door, said they'd be patrolling the area, given my complaint. Their presence was reassuring, but I still felt vulnerable. Days went by, but the feeling of being watched never left. Even with the police keeping an eye out, the weight on my chest wouldn't lift. And while the car didn't return, other things began to happen. There were anonymous gifts outside my door. A single rose, a box of chocolates. The worst was a photograph of my table set, clearly taken from outside my window. Feeling trapped in my own home, I decided to stay with Lisa for a while. Her place felt safer, warmer, and was a good 20 minutes from my house. But even there, when I went out, I felt eyes on me. The world seemed to have lost its innocence, and I was beginning to grow paranoid of everyone and everything around me. Switching up my routine seemed like the best bet. Maybe if I changed my patterns, my stalker would lose interest. So I started attending evening yoga classes, joining group activities, and even volunteered at a local community center on weekends. I thought surrounding myself with people might be the buffer I needed. One morning, as I left Lisa's place to head to an early yoga class, I found a crumpled note under her doormat. "Stay flexible," it read. The vague but suggestive words left me in a cold sweat. I had no idea how this person was able to track me down. Every time I saw someone lingering a little too long, or someone I didn't recognize, my heart would race. I avoided the internet, thinking that maybe they were tracking me online, and despite Lisa's reassurances, I couldn't shake off the feeling that someone was always watching. My once cherished morning walks with Sparky became rushed. No more leisurely strolls or visiting the local dog park. Every outing was calculated and brief, and I could tell it was affecting him too. His once playful demeanor now replaced with a more subdued one. One evening, after a group meditation session, I found my car with a flat tire. It could have been a coincidence, but stuck to my windshield was another note, which read, "Breathe." Whoever was doing this was watching closely and enjoyed playing these twisted mind games. Lisa and I installed security cameras around her place, thinking this might deter the stalker or at least give us some footage to provide to the police. Every evening, we'd review the recordings, hoping for a clue. But even with the cameras, the notes kept coming, each eerily more personal than the last. "I like your new shoes. That yoga pose suits you." The specificity of them made my skin crawl. To keep myself occupied, I took up painting. It was something I'd always wanted to do, and it served as a form of therapy. But even in this new hobby, my unease manifested. My canvases were filled with haunting eyes, shadowy figures, and an overwhelming sense of being pursued. One morning, a package arrived. No return address. Inside was a small canvas, with a painted image of my house, with a shadowy silhouette in the window. The accompanying note was just a smiley face. It was clear the stalker knew about my newfound hobby and wanted to taunt me with it. My trust in the outside world started to fade quickly. I obviously had no idea who this psycho from Craigslist was or how they looked like. The constant guessing game of who it could be made it hard to trust anyone, turning casual acquaintances into potential suspects. Lisa suggested moving cities, starting fresh. The idea was tempting, a new start, away from this nightmare. But the fear that they might follow, or worse, already know of such plans, kept me paralyzed. There was an evening when we thought we had a breakthrough. The cameras picked up a figure, lingering near the entrance of Lisa's driveway. But the face was obscured, and the figure slipped away before the camera could catch more. The police tried. They really did. They increased patrols, monitored the area, even put a temporary restraining order against a suspect. But without solid evidence or a clear face to pin the harassment on, their hands were tied. The more I tried to escape, the tighter the grip of fear became. Friends trying to help would invite me out or offer their homes as sanctuaries. But every unfamiliar noise, every slight movement in the peripheral, would send me into panic. I started documenting everything, every note, every gift, every unsettling event. Maybe, if I pieced it all together, a pattern would emerge, a clue to the identity of my tormentor. Lisa remained my rock through it all. We took self-defense classes together, changed our daily routines frequently, and even considered hiring a private investigator. But no matter what we did, the feeling of being under a microscope persisted. As weeks turned into months, my world became smaller, confined mostly to Lisa's house. Every once in a while, when bravery surged, I'd venture out, only to retreat quickly, feeling exposed and vulnerable. The peak of it all was the night the power went out. It was pitch black, making it extremely difficult to see anything around me. And for a few terrifying moments, I felt an overwhelming sense of dread. Nothing happened that night, but the event solidified my constant state of anxiety. And so, life continued in this new normal. The harassment didn't stop, but neither did it escalate to physical harm. But the damage was done. The once vibrant, trusting young woman was replaced by someone who jumped at shadows, who second-guessed every interaction, and who saw potential danger in every corner of her world. And while the face of my stalker remained unknown, their presence was a ghost that haunted every waking moment of my life. There's an unspoken rule everyone knows but rarely acknowledges. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. When I looked back at how all this began, it was obvious that I'd willingly plunge myself into a spiraling pit of despair and danger, thanks to a Craigslist ad. Back in those days, I was a student struggling to balance between class assignments and my part-time job at the local diner. Juggling the two was tough, and paying rent for my apartment was even tougher. Out of sheer desperation, I took to Craigslist. A day after posting the ad, my inbox was filled with responses. Some were downright strange. There was the guy who wanted to pay rent and interpretive dances, and the lady who claimed she could communicate with houseplants. There was one response that stood out, from a guy who said he was a student from a neighboring college. We decided to meet at Joe's, the local coffee shop. He showed up in jeans and a hoodie, looking every bit the college student. We talked about classes, hobbies, and our mutual love for old school rock. It felt right. A week later, he moved in. His belongings were limited. A mattress and two suitcases. That's it. I didn't think much of it then. After all, college life tends to strip you down to essentials. Our routine soon settled into a comfortable rhythm. We'd occasionally share meals, watch TV, or discuss the latest college gossip. Then came the night that turned everything upside down. He casually asked if a few of his friends could come over. He assured me that they were good guys. My gut feeling was to decline, but I didn't want to be that lame roommate, so I agreed. The trio arrived later that evening. Two of them seemed normal enough, but one had this constant twitch in his eye. They laughed, joked around, and at first, everything seemed fine. But as the night progressed, their line of questioning took an unsettling turn. They'd ask about my family, if I had close ties, or if I often stayed out late. The questions felt invasive, probing, but not overtly hostile. I tried to brush off the unease that settled in my stomach, chalking it up to my own paranoia. What I didn't realize was that the questions weren't casual banter. They were meticulously planned. The group had an unsettling ability to redirect any topic back to me, learning as much as possible, probing my habits, my lifestyle. It was as if I was being studied, but I had no idea for what purpose. As the evening wore on, I couldn't shake off the growing feeling that something was off. The way they looked at me, the way they whispered among themselves, when they thought I wasn't paying attention. The atmosphere in the apartment grew stifling, heavy with tension. Eventually, they left and relief washed over me. My roommate acted as though it had been a regular evening, completely oblivious to the strange undertones of the night. I decided not to bring it up, hoping it was just a one-time thing. But it wasn't. That night, I felt watched. Every creak of the floorboards, every draft from the window, freaked me the hell out. On multiple occasions, I woke up nearly jumping out of my skin, as though someone was in the room with me. I'd flick on the lights, look around, but there was no one. It was during one of these crazy nights that I spotted something odd, a shadow that quickly vanished under my bed. I blinked, rubbing my eyes, but when I looked again, there was nothing. I told myself it was fatigue, stress, anything but the truth. As days became weeks, the unsettling feeling stuck around. Then came the invite, the one that would push everything over the edge. The group wanted to go ghost hunting in an old abandoned mental asylum about an hour away. I immediately felt a pang of unease. Despite my reservations, they were relentless in trying to persuade me. They painted it as a thrilling adventure, a break from the monotony of college life. In a moment of madness, or perhaps sheer curiosity, I agreed. A cloud of dread hung over me as the day drew closer. I tried shaking it off, reminding myself that it was just an old building. But every time I thought about the trip, a voice in my head screamed not to go. Little did I know that ignoring that voice would be the biggest mistake of my life. The day of the trip, they picked me up in an old van. The mood was festive, with loud music and laughter filling the air. But as we got closer to our destination, the atmosphere shifted. The laughter died down, replaced by an eerie silence. The asylum began to come into view, and it looked terrifying. We entered, armed with flashlights. At first, it was fun, exploring the old corridors and rooms. But then, an hour in, I wanted out. The place felt wrong, and every fiber of my being screamed at me to leave. But they wouldn't let me. That realization hit me like a ton of bricks. I was trapped, with no way out, in a company of people I no longer recognized. Panic set in, but I knew I had to keep a clear head if I wanted to get out of there alive. Every instinct in me said to make a break for it, but without a vehicle and being unfamiliar with the area, escape would be a risky gamble. Anyways, I knew that staying with them was an even bigger risk. Without warning, I bolted. The echoing sounds of my footsteps in the cavernous asylum seemed deafening. Behind me, shouts echoed, and the beam from their flashlights danced wildly on the walls. My heart pounded so hard, I was sure they could hear it. As I ran, memories of the weeks prior flooded back. The invasive questions, the shadow beneath my bed, the oppressive tension. All these incidents were breadcrumbs leading up to this very moment. The chilling corridors of the asylum twisted and turned, but luck was on my side. I stumbled upon an old service exit. The door was heavy, but with adrenaline pumping through my veins, I managed to force it open. The cold night air hit me, and as I sprinted into the open, the realization of my narrow escape was almost surreal. I ran and ran, not daring to look back, fearing the sight of their silhouettes chasing me. After what felt like hours, my tired legs carried me to a main road. The sparse illumination from the moonlight revealed an upcoming bend, and I prayed for a passing vehicle. Suddenly, headlights appeared and a car sped around the bend. I took a leap of faith, waving frantically, hoping the driver would see me. The vehicle screeched to a stop, mere inches from where I stood, and a middle-aged couple, eyes wide in shock, quickly let me in. As we sped away, I explained my situation. The couple, horrified, immediately headed to the nearest police station. There, under the cold, reassuring lights, I told the officers what happened. The police launched an immediate investigation, but my roommate and his friends were like ghosts. The apartment bore no trace of him, and inquiries at the neighboring college yielded nothing. It was as if he had never existed. For weeks after the incident, I struggled to sleep, jumpiness becoming my second nature. I moved out of the apartment and into a new city, attempting to start afresh, but the scars of the past still haunt me. Let me start off by saying that I am still trying to process what the hell happened to me a few months ago. I thought Craigslist was just a place to score some quick cash gigs, but the gig I'm going to share with you today is one I deeply regret ever responding to. Looking back, there were red flags everywhere, hints of the chaos that awaited. I guess when you're young and desperate for cash, you tend to overlook things you shouldn't. As I was navigating through Craigslist one day, a post stood out, promising good pay for odd jobs. It sounded like the perfect deal for a college student like me who was short on cash. The details were clear. The work would be in the Echo Park vicinity, a stone's throw away from my dorm. Without hesitation, I shot back a response. Not long after that, I got a reply from the person who posted the ad. His name was Liam, and he mentioned living in an old house off Glendale Boulevard. He explained that he had stuff in his basement that needed moving, and some yard work as well. Everything sounded straightforward. We settled on the coming Saturday for me to help him out. When Saturday rolled around, I drove down to the address. The house, an aging Spanish-style structure, sat there, its paint peeling and garden running wild. It looked like a place that had seen better days. Parking my car, I made my way to the doorstep. The door was answered by a tall, middle-aged man, his hairline retreating and beard giving off a neglected vibe. With a thick Australian accent, he asked if I was the guy who responded to his Craigslist ad, to which I confirmed I was. We shook hands. His grip was really intimidating, as it was strong and I could feel his rough, calloused skin. This guy obviously did a lot of work with his hands. Inside, I immediately noticed boxes scattered all over the place. A musty odor filled the air, as if fresh air hadn't circulated in ages. Liam pointed out some boxes, saying they were destined for the basement. Picking up the first one, I was struck by its lightness. It felt as if it was stuffed with paper. The thought crossed my mind, why store mere paper in a basement? But I pushed the thought away. Making my way to the basement door, I sensed Liam trailing right behind me. The door was heavy, giving out a loud creak as I pushed it open. The staircase spiraled down, dimly lit and tight. Stepping into the basement, I was hit with how big it was. Totally wasn't ready for that. Cemented floor, boxes everywhere, and some old pieces of furniture thrown in. But what intrigued me was another door at the other end. It looked oddly new compared to its surroundings. The task of stacking the boxes began, but throughout, I couldn't shake off the sensation that Liam's eyes were constantly on me. Every time I dared to look his way, he seemed to quickly turn his attention elsewhere. While I was in the swing of things, I knocked a box over by accident. It burst open, revealing old newspapers. No big deal, but Liam's reaction was odd. He seemed more irked than I would have expected, cautioning me to be more careful. He then mentioned heading upstairs for water. It struck me as odd, leaving a stranger in your basement, but I brushed it off as trust. His absence made my curiosity spike. I felt drawn to that newer door. As I neared it, a cold breeze hit me. I tried the handle, locked, of course. But just then, footsteps echoed down the stairs. In a flash, I went back to stacking boxes, acting absorbed in my task. Liam came back, holding two glasses of water. However, he seemed different. A shade paler, and something in his hand caught my eye. A key. He handed over a glass, mentioning I might be thirsty. But my focus was on that key. I had a hunch it was linked to the door. I took a sip, attempting to keep my composure. As hours passed, a sense of unease settled in. I thought about wrapping up and leaving, but just as I was about to voice my thoughts, Liam spoke up. He said there was one more thing, directing my attention to the mysterious door, mentioning moving items from inside. An unsettling feeling began to develop inside me. Something wasn't right here. Seeing the alarm on my face, Liam attempted to sound casual. He mentioned that it was just an extra storage room he'd built recently, which explained its newer look. He went on to explain that it had some old furniture pieces he wanted to get rid of, and he needed my help to move them out. However, when he unlocked the door and pushed it open, the room's interior contradicted his words. Instead of a storage space filled with furniture, it was almost empty. There was just a chair in the center and what looked like dried stains on the floor. My heart raced. Feigning ignorance, I remarked on the room's odd design, suggesting it might be a renovation project he was working on. Liam hesitated for a moment, then muttered something about it being a work in progress. Desperately looking for a way out, I pretended to get a text. I made up an excuse about a friend having an emergency, emphasizing that I needed to leave immediately. Liam's demeanor changed. He seemed panicky, constantly glancing between me and a room. He tried to persuade me to stay, offering more money, and then finally insisting that the job was almost done. But with each plea, my desire to leave grew stronger. Luckily, I remembered a self-defense class I had taken at college, which emphasized the importance of staying calm and assertive in dangerous situations. Drawing on that training, I looked Liam directly in the eyes and firmly reiterated that I had to leave. There was a tense moment where neither of us moved, as if we were both assessing the situation and deciding the next move. Suddenly, Liam's phone rang, disrupting the thick atmosphere. He seemed caught off guard, glancing at the caller ID. I took this momentary distraction as my cue, making a beeline for the stairs. As I raced up, I could hear him yelling behind me, but I didn't dare look back. Bursting through the front door, I dashed to my car. Fumbling with the keys, adrenaline pumping, I managed to start it up and sped away, leaving the house and Liam far behind. When I reached the safety of my dorm, I locked all the doors and took a moment to process what had just happened. Trembling, I called the police and recounted the entire incident. A few hours later, an officer called back to update me on the situation. He explained that when they arrived at Liam's residence, they found evidence connecting him to several recent disappearances in the area. They believed he might have used his Craigslist ad to lure potential victims to his home. The underground chamber, eerily reminiscent of a holding cell, was suspected to be where he confined them. The officer commended me for my quick thinking and actions, telling me things could have turned out very differently had I not trusted my instincts. My college offered counseling services, which I gratefully accepted, trying to process the trauma. But if there's one thing I took away from this horrible experience, it's the importance of trusting your gut feeling. No matter how trivial or baseless your suspicions may seem at the moment, it could very well be the thing that saves your life. To this day, I shudder to think of what might have happened had I not acted on my instincts. Craigslist, once a simple platform to find quick gigs, now serves as a chilling reminder of the day I came face to face with pure evil. About 8 months ago, I decided to declutter a bit and stumbled upon an old vintage camera I'd barely used. As a woman who always appreciated vintage aesthetics, it held a special place in my heart, but the camera had mostly decorated my shelf. Figuring another enthusiast might get more use out of it, I listed it on Craigslist. A few days later, a guy showed keen interest. We agreed on a price, and I thought of meeting him in a cafe or a park. However, he mentioned he wasn't familiar with the area and hinted that my home might be a more convenient spot. Reluctantly, and against my better judgment, I agreed. The day of the transaction seemed ordinary at first. After a close look at the camera and showing it was to his liking, he gave the amount we decided on. As we chatted, I noticed his eyes wandering around my apartment, complimenting its coziness and stating how it seemed reflective of a woman with a keen eye for detail. I brushed it off, attributing his comments to polite conversation. A few days later, though, he reached out with a concern about the camera, something he said he didn't spot during our first meeting. Wanting to be helpful, I allowed him to visit, but when he did, I was unnerved to see that he seemed more focused on my living area than the camera issue. He commented on my new cushions and the placement of a plant by the window. His sharp memory of these details left me feeling a bit concerned. From there, his visits became more frequent. He'd find reasons, suggesting maybe he left an item behind, or asking if I had more vintage treasures up for sale. Each time, he'd note minor changes in my apartment since his previous visit. The extent of his attention was becoming increasingly disturbing. Over brunch, I shared my worries with my friends, and they all agreed it was concerning. It wasn't typical for someone to be this fascinated with another person's living space, especially over a simple online transaction. Knowing they felt the same way made me more anxious. After deciding to put my foot down, I clearly told him he couldn't visit my home when he contacted me again. I made it clear that any future exchanges, if at all, should happen in public. Even after a few days, I couldn't help but feel I'd mistakenly let someone unknown into my personal area. Despite my firm stance, he contacted me again not long after. This time, he asked if I had an old camera accessory, guessing from the camera I had sold him. Although I did own some accessories, there was no way I was diving back into that situation. I firmly informed him I had nothing else for sale and urged him to look elsewhere. His reply dripped with a kind of disappointment that was both puzzling and unsettling. He said he missed our, quote, little chats and the, quote, cozy feel of my apartment. It wasn't only calls or messages. He kept pushing in other ways, too. I spot him at places I often visited, be it the local bookstore, the cafe where I loved grabbing my morning latte, or even the park where I occasionally jogged. He seemed to be everywhere. He'd always have an excuse, calling these meetings mere coincidences, but the frequency was too high to be random. Fear began to creep into my everyday life. Each time I saw a familiar-looking figure in a crowd, or a car idling near my building a tattoo long, my heart would race. Nights became restless as my imagination painted scenarios of him lurking nearby. Desperate for assistance, I reported my fears to the local police. Though sympathetic, they required more solid evidence to do anything about it. Determined, I began to document every unsettling encounter, each unplanned meeting, the times he'd show up near my home, and even the slightest changes I'd notice around my apartment. It felt as if he wanted me to know he was always nearby. In a bid for some semblance of peace, I invested in a security system. Time wore on, and my documentation began painting a distressing pattern. When the evidence was presented to the authorities, they took action right away. Their investigation showed that I wasn't the only one. He had targeted other women who sold items online, following a similar eerie pattern with each. This discovery was both horrifying and validating. With the law on my side and a restraining order in place, he was finally forced to keep his distance. The whole situation showed how dangerous the online world can be today. It's really important for everyone, especially women, to be careful and set limits when buying or selling online. Growing up in the poorer parts of the city, life wasn't exactly a bouquet of roses. My mom, battling her own demons, left when I was just 15, thrusting me and my kid sister, Jess, into the care of our aging grandmother. Granny did her best, knitting together love and lessons and resilience for us, but her frail health and limited pension didn't go far. Eviction notices, unpaid bills, and endless bowls of instant noodles were the rhythms of our days. The lack of a degree, coupled with being a product of a tough neighborhood, meant my job prospects were slim as a 22-year-old. Jess, with her wide-eyed innocence, always believed I'd pull through. That pressure was like a ton of bricks on my back. It was during one of those late-night internet hunts for jobs that I stumbled upon this Craigslist ad. The ad read, "Night shift janitor for an old club, decent pay, and in cash." The pay was honestly too good for a simple janitorial job. But then again, the thought of actually giving Jess a decent meal and paying off a couple of bills was too tempting. I figured maybe they needed confidentiality or had a cash-based business, so I shrugged off the oddities. The interview was, for a lack of a better word, bizarre. The club wasn't modern by any means, with its dim lighting and old floors. When they led me to the back room, with stern-faced men eyeing me, it felt like I was in some gangster movie. They didn't ask much, just if I could keep my mouth shut and do my job. I remember chalking it up to maybe the club being a front for some gambling ring or something less sinister. Was I being naive? Absolutely. I took the job, and some time had passed. The work was straightforward enough, mostly mopping up spilled drinks and cleaning up after the wild nights. But then, there were the faces I couldn't ignore. Young folks, looking more lost than drunk, coming and going at odd hours. It was easy to turn a blind eye at first, attributing it to the city's wild nightlife. But soon, I couldn't deny the nagging feeling that there was more than met the eye. One night, my suspicion grew stronger when I discovered a hidden room while trying to fix a jammed door. To my horror, it wasn't just booze and old furniture inside. Chains, empty vials, and discarded clothing littered the floor. It was a lot to take in, and I felt I was only scratching the surface. I thought maybe it was drug-related or some underground fight club. The clarity came when one night, as I was taking out the trash, I overheard two men talking about new shipments and market prices. The jigsaw puzzle clicked, revealing a grim picture. The club wasn't just for partygoers, it was a front for human trafficking. Grasping this truth was like having a weight suddenly dropped on me. The moral dilemma ate at me. I wasn't some action hero from the movies, ready to take down a trafficking ring. But then there was Jess. Keeping the job meant a steady income, but at what cost? Nights became sleepless, wrestling with my conscience, trying to figure out a way to help without endangering Jess and myself. That's when I remembered Ray, a cop from my school days. We weren't best buds, but he once stood up for me during a school fight. An idea began to form. If I could gather some evidence, perhaps Ray would be my ticket out of this mess. The decision to act wasn't taken lightly. Every night after my shift, I began scouring the club, collecting evidence. From scraps of paper with suspicious details, to photos of rooms and hidden areas, I stealthily gathered as much as I could. It felt like I was living two lives, the daytime protector of Jess and the nighttime sleuth of a shady club. The relationship with other club workers was tricky. Some of them were probably in the know and maybe even part of the whole scheme. Then there were others like me, likely clueless or maybe too scared to ask questions. Every so often, we'd share a look, silently asking if the other had any clue. The connection with Ray was my trump card. Since we weren't that close in school, I reached out to him discreetly, hinting at having information about some illegal activities. Trusting him was a gamble, but my gut told me it was the right move. He indirectly communicated his interests, asking me to gather as much evidence as possible. The strain of it all started to take its toll. There were times I felt the walls closing in, like someone was onto me. Paranoia or reality, it was hard to tell. Jess picked up on my tension, constantly worrying about the late nights and my distant demeanor. Protecting her was paramount, and I made arrangements for her to stay with a distant relative for a while, using the excuse that our granny needed some specialized medical care out of town. As the days blurred together, a breakthrough came in the form of a ledger. It contained names, dates, transactions, and other incriminating details. Making a copy and ensuring the original was back in its place, I knew I had to be extra careful now. The plan was simple: pass the evidence to Ray, ensure our safety, and hope that the traffickers would be caught. I couldn't confront them directly or even hint that I was onto them. Every interaction became a test of nerves, trying not to give anything away. Finally, after what seemed like an eternity, Ray let me know indirectly that a raid was being planned. The satisfaction of knowing I was doing something right clashed with the fear of being discovered. All I could think about was getting back to my sister and granny alive. The day after passing on the evidence, I quit the job, giving a vague excuse about a better opportunity elsewhere. Using some saved cash, I traveled to where Jess and Granny were staying with our distant relative. Their safety had been my driving force, and seeing them again, away from the immediate danger, was a relief beyond words. Jess, Granny, and I did our best to stay off the radar, grateful for the shelter of our relative's home. I never heard the results of the raid firsthand, but online news articles confirmed the bust of a major trafficking ring. We eventually moved to another town altogether. Starting a new life, I felt a tremendous amount of relief, knowing that I helped play a role in stopping such a wicked operation. A few months ago, my wife and I wanted to celebrate our wedding anniversary. It was a special occasion, and we thought it would be nice to have a romantic evening out. We don't usually do this, but since it was a special night, we decided to hire a babysitter for our two young kids. Being a bit naive about the whole online process, I thought it would be a good idea to post an ad on Craigslist. I know, not the brightest idea in hindsight. The response rate was pretty good. Several potential babysitters replied to the ad, but there was this one young woman who stood out. She was well-spoken in her messages, claimed to have some prior experience, and even offered references. She sounded perfect. We exchanged a few more messages, and I started to get this comforting vibe from her. We decided to hire her for that Friday evening. As the day approached, my wife and I were both excited about our plans, while the kids seemed enthusiastic about having a new babysitter. But a couple of days before our date, a friend of mine mentioned a few horror stories he'd heard about people hiring strangers from Craigslist. Naturally, I started feeling a bit concerned, but I tried brushing it off, reminding myself of the pleasant interactions I'd had with this babysitter. When she arrived that Friday, she looked pretty ordinary, a young woman with a pleasant demeanor. We briefly chatted, gave her a rundown of the kids' routines, and left our emergency contact numbers. As we headed out, my wife squeezed my hand, telling me she had a strange feeling. It's not like her to be paranoid, so it caught me off guard. I told her it was just the nerves of leaving the kids with someone new. The restaurant was lovely, and we tried our best to focus on each other and enjoy the evening. However, that uneasy feeling lingered. My wife checked her phone frequently, expecting a call or a message from the babysitter, but there was nothing. We both joked that no news was good news, but it was evident we were both a bit on edge. Our meal ended, and as we headed back to the car, my wife's phone finally buzzed. It was a text from our neighbor. She said she noticed some unusual activity at her house, with several unfamiliar cars pulling up briefly and then leaving. My heart raced as I read the message. Something was definitely not right. The moment we got that text, every possible scenario started racing through our heads. I questioned if we unknowingly invited trouble into our home. The drive back felt the longest one ever. Every red light was a torment. Every slow driver in front of us felt like an obstacle keeping us from our kids. My wife tried calling the babysitter multiple times, but there was no answer. The panic was real. We decided to call the police from the car, explaining the situation and our concerns. They told us they sent a patrol car to our home and advised us to wait outside until they arrived. But as parents, waiting outside while uncertain of our kids' safety felt like an impossible task. Pulling into our driveway, we noticed the front door was slightly open. The living room lights were on, but there was an eerie silence. My wife and I exchanged a terrified look, agreeing silently to proceed with caution. We tiptoed towards the house, hearing soft, muffled sounds from the kids' room. As we entered, the scene was nothing short of chaotic. Our living room was a mess with bottles of beer and some unfamiliar belongings scattered about. It looked like there had been some sort of impromptu party while we were away. But our primary concern was finding our children. Rushing to their room, we were met with the sight of our kids, thankfully safe, huddled in a corner with their favorite toys. They looked scared, but unharmed. The police arrived shortly after, and a quick search of the premises found the babysitter locked in the bathroom, incoherently mumbling to herself. It turned out she had invited some friends over, who treated our home like their personal hangout spot. She seemed to be on some sort of substance, and the cops quickly apprehended her. After the dust settled and the shock started to wear off, one thing became abundantly clear to both of us. Craigslist was forever off the table. The mere mention of the site was like opening up an old wound. While it wasn't fair to blame an entire platform for the poor choices of one individual, the association was now too strong to ignore. In our hearts, the website became synonymous with that dreadful night. Every time someone even hinted at using Craigslist around me, I'd immediately recall the terrified faces of my children and the chaos that stranger brought into our home.